One of the most prevalent questions explored in the sci-fi genre is whether or not we are alone in the universe. This question has sparked many imaginative theories and creative stories centering on how alien creatures might interact with the inhabitants of the Earth. Because we don't know anything about aliens, these stories take on a very mysterious tone. This episode's movie is no exception. We will be diving into that mystery today on Fiction, Fact, or Fallacy. The Vast of Night is a movie released in 2019, directed by Andrew Patterson. It is an incredibly inventive film, playing with old ideas about aliens and the future, and portraying them in a unique light. It has since received critical acclaim and many positive reviews, and is currently available on Amazon Prime. If you care about spoilers, watch the movie before returning to this podcast. The Vast of Night follows the story of two teenagers, Everett and Faye, who live in the tiny town of Cayuga, New Mexico, in the 1950s. Everett is a DJ at the local radio station, and Faye is one of the town's switchboard operators. The movie begins by following these two characters walking through an empty town at night. Everyone else is at the local school, watching a basketball game against the team's rivals. As they make their way to the place Faye works at, the pair discusses concepts they believe might be possible in the future, including vacuum trains, self-driving cars, and handheld phones. As the night progresses, Faye discovers a strange noise that becomes increasingly prevalent throughout the switchboard circuits. She gets the help of Everett and the listeners on his radio station to find more information about the noise and strange circumstances that surround it. A man named Billy calls into the station, offering information about the noise. Billy says he used to work for the military and had the opportunity to work on an incredibly secret project in the middle of the desert. He helped excavate a strange device that emitted a strange noise over the radio waves. Billy claims these noises are the device trying to communicate with ships thousands of miles in the sky. Another listener of Everett's radio broadcast, an old lady named Mabel, calls in and offers another story about these strange visitors. Mabel talks about her son, who grew up with many extraordinary experiences. Her son seemed to speak in an unrecognizable language at times, chanting a particular phrase over and over. He would also seem to occasionally be possessed and stare at the sky without wavering, only to suddenly resume whatever he was doing. Mabel's son finally disappeared when he was still young. The only signs of him were a set of footprints leading into the desert, only to stop randomly. Mabel believes he was finally taken by aliens he had a strange mental connection with. Since that incident, she claims the aliens have been influencing humans on a global scale, pitting them against each other and making sure they stay in conflict with each other. Mabel also believes they come back occasionally to abduct large groups of people in the middle of nowhere, staying away from densely populated cities. She ends her story by claiming everyone at the town's basketball game will disappear, never to be seen again. During their entire investigation, Everett and Faye keep hearing there are strange lights in the sky. After a strange encounter with the alien chanting, their investigation leads them into the woods where they meet the aliens face to face. In an interesting twist, the alien saucers abduct the pair, leaving everyone at the basketball game ultimately unharmed. The Vast of Night speculates about the existence and nature of aliens. In this episode of Fiction, Fact, or Fallacy, we will be analyzing both the claims Everett and Faye made about the future and the plausibility of the stereotypical alien civilization the Vast of Night portrays, right after a quick break. Before we delve into the exciting aliens, we are going to look at the vision of the future these young teenagers had. We want to look at not only how accurate their ideas were, but whether or not anyone in the 1950s were developing these ideas as the characters claim. The first story Faye shares with Everett is the one about self-driving cars. She claims there was a test in the state of Nebraska where circuits in the road and in a car work together to allow the car to operate somewhat autonomously. It would stay in the center of its lane, slow down if there was heavy traffic ahead, and help the driver out with directions along the route. This story is actually true. In 1957, Leland Hancock, a traffic engineer working for the Nebraska Department of Roads, worked together with RCA Labs to implement a system of lights and coils into a stretch of highway. A car was actually able to drive along this highway for a brief period, with only minimal input from a driver inside. It was able to stay inside the lanes and maintain a safe following distance using the coils buried in the road. Hancock fought to get the system implemented on a larger scale, but was ultimately unsuccessful. There were several administrative barriers that prevented him from achieving his larger goal in the end. Perhaps if Hancock had been successful, the vision Faye described to Everett of a self-driving road network would be possible today. Faye also shares another story from her magazine about the possibility of creating a network of high-speed vacuum trains throughout the country, allowing travel across the continent in less than an hour. It turns out this dream of extremely high-speed travel has existed since the 1800s. The biggest limiting factor when it comes to vehicle speed is air resistance. This is one of the reasons many airliners fly at 40,000 feet above sea level. The air is thin enough at this altitude to fly somewhat efficiently at high speeds. If a tunnel was built and all the air sucked out of it, a train could reach extremely high speeds very quickly. If the train was magnetically levitated as well, there would theoretically be no friction, and the train could coast at these high speeds once reaching them for the entire duration of the journey, using very little energy. Given the demand for faster and faster transportation in the 1950s, it is realistic that the people of the time would be dreaming of these fast and efficient means of travel. If vacuum trains are supposedly so useful, why don't we have them today? There are several issues when it comes to moving that fast. One of the biggest is safety. An object moving at near orbital speeds inside a tight tunnel is bound to cause some problems. The wiggle room the trains would have is not much, and any slight disturbance might send it careening into the walls, ceiling, or floor, likely obliterating everything on board. It is also incredibly difficult to maintain a vacuum for such a long tunnel. the entire length of the rail system would have to be perfectly protected from the air pressure outside, and the smallest leak anywhere could have disastrous consequences for the entire system. The final issue, and possibly the biggest, is the matter of cost. Magnetically levitating high-speed trains do exist today and take advantage of magnets to eliminate contact with the rails. Their speed is still limited by air resistance, however. These maglev trains are incredibly expensive to build. China expects its high-speed rails to cost over $20 million for every mile of track. The addition of an airtight tunnel would only increase the cost more. While it is interesting to listen to teenagers from the 50s speculate about the future we currently live in, the most exciting part about the Vast of Night are obviously its aliens. While the movie never explicitly showed us what the aliens looked like, it did describe their attributes in detail. We can look at these attributes and determine whether it's reasonable for a group of aliens to express them. One of the first things we learn about the aliens is how they communicate with each other, at least through space. They send out signals constantly on multiple frequencies of radio or electromagnetic waves. These signals can even make it into the phone lines in some cases. While we don't have any real-world examples of alien communication, we can look at this method of communication practically. Even if we assume the aliens don't have super advanced methods of communication without radio waves, there really is no reason to broadcast a signal on multiple frequencies. If the aliens are trying to keep their presence a secret, as is suggested later in the movie, this is one of the worst ways to keep yourself quiet, especially in a world that just discovered radio and has millions of receivers around the globe that could possibly pick up your signal. Another attribute the aliens have is their connection to the human mind. According to Mabel's story, her son had a mental connection to the aliens and started chanting random phrases from a very young age. He would also go into strange spells where he locked eyes with the sky and would be entranced for some time. He was finally abducted by the aliens and was never seen again. If the aliens had extremely advanced technology, it might be plausible that they could have some sort of mind control ability. However, if we look at this once again from a practical point, it wouldn't make any sense to use such an ability in a blatantly obvious manner if secrecy is a top priority. If aliens were constantly controlling people and ultimately making them disappear, it wouldn't be long before patterns were recognized and the nature of the aliens was uncovered. Finally, as mentioned before, one of the most important characteristics the aliens have is that they operate mainly in secrecy. Mabel points this out in her story, but all the other evidence suggests that aliens are doing a bad job of keeping their existence a secret. The government already knows about them, as evidenced by Billy's story, and while they are covering the aliens up as well, word still gets around through the people that work for them. The aliens also fly close to the surface, as seen in the final scene of the movie, and leave physical trails of their presence. While we don't have any example of aliens that have come to Earth and shared their motivations, it isn't hard to imagine what they might want. It seems the aliens, in the vast of night, want to study humans while keeping themselves a secret. If they wanted to study us without contaminating our culture or ideas, there are better ways of doing so with the technology they demonstrate than shown in the movie. If they are able to travel vast interstellar distances just to visit humans, the aliens would be capable of finding ways of abducting humans without leaving a trace, instead of giving plenty of evidence of their existence. The Vast of Night is an intriguing movie that plays into the many common tropes science fiction uses discussing aliens. Even though we have never seen aliens and wouldn't know their motivations or capabilities, we can demonstrate that these tropes, and therefore, The Vast of Night is ultimately somewhat unrealistic in its depiction of extraterrestrial visitors. However, the way the characters in the movie discuss how they imagine the future is realistic for their expectations at the time, even if that future never came to pass. If you have any suggestions for future topics, questions about this episode, or comments to make in general, please be sure to leave a voice message on this show's anchor page. The link to that page is in the description of this podcast. While you are there, and if you enjoy this podcast and would like to support it, please consider contributing with a small monthly donation. This episode was created and produced by Sawyer Krueger. See you next time on Fiction, Fact, or Fallacy.